Hello, my name is Dewey Pascal, and today is January 26th, Tuesday, a very cold, white day outside. And last night we listened to, just to put historically in perspective here, we listened to President Ronald Reagan give his State of the Union address of his final year of his second term in office. And I have seated right across from me Mr. Vincent Policicchio, a good friend of mine, fellow musician, fellow teacher, fellow neighbor. How are you today, Vince?
Oh, just fine, Dewey.
Just wanted to open things up a little bit, Vince, with if you would give us a little biographical sketch of you, of your life, and tell us when you were born and where and what you've been doing.
Well, I think we have to go back to the just about 61 years and
wow.
Go back. And I was born and raised in International Falls. And attended school there until the 11th grade. And at that time, the Second World War was about in the midst of it. And there was 11 of my friends, Italians, Ukrainians, that decided to quit school and join the armed forces. And that's what we did. The end of the 11th grade. We didn't finish our senior year, but we did get credit for the service time in the senior year, and also a USAFI course that the government let us partake in, and that's how I finished my high school degree. And but in the Navy, I joined the I tried out for special services because I wasn't Italian. I could read and write it, and ended up thinking that I could be an interpreter, but Uncle Sam thought that I would be better use, instead of in Italy, be better use in the South Pacific, if that made any sense. But I guess that's the way the armed services went. And played in the Navy band aboard one of the ships. Oh, by the way, I did go to the Navy school in Washington and in music, and ended up getting transferred then to a ship. And we musicians really kind of had a real easy time of it, except when there was some gunnery practice or something like that, then we'd have to help out lifting shells and throwing them, discarding
right?
them. I happened to be a third loader on a 5-inch gun, because the our music director there said that they didn't want fingers smashed or anything like that. So all we had to do is push the shells over to the side, and then they went up a trough and into the somebody else's hands.
Very responsible duty.
Oh, very,
yes.
Very. But anyway, and then got out of the service, and I putzed around, I guess is what the word is, for about a year, and couldn't really decide what I was going to do. And finally, in 1946-47 school year, I decided to go to school, and as it happened, at the time there was this big polio epidemic, and one of my relatives contacted this polio, the Bobar polio, which I didn't know anything about at the time, and I drove him down to the cities, and then they told me that I could not. They asked me where I was going to go to school, and I told them the University of Minnesota, and I ended up, they canceled me out because I may have been a carrier because I was in contact. So at that point, I decided to go out to a music school out in California, and called the Vermilia Academy of Music.
Where in California is that?
That was in Los Angeles.
In LA.
Yeah. And we were the first class that we took nothing but music all day long. There were no other courses, just music.
Mm-hmm.
And it was trying to get accredited by UCLA, and when we took the final exam at the end of the year, we ranked higher than their own music students, so then they took the Vermilier Academy of Music and put it under the wing of the University of California, right. Los Angeles.
That happened after you graduated? Or?
Yeah, no. Well, we were the first graduating class in music.
I see.
Then I transferred back to here because to Morehead, because my teacher, who was teaching out there at Vermilier, came back to Minnesota and did some work for the Morehead State College at that time. And so I moved back, and that's how I got my Bachelor of Science degree.
Excuse me, I bet that was about the time there was Morehead State Teachers College.
Yes, right? It was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was the State Teachers College. And at that point, then I graduated from there, and my first job that I took, the first and only job that I ever took, was assisting the Morehead High School band under the direction of Lorne Busley. And it was during that practice teaching time that he decided that he would like to have an orchestra department with a specialist in strings. And that's how I got my job here in Morehead. And I stayed 35 years and developed the orchestra from 24 strings to about 600 strings at the high point.
And that's amazing.
Ended up with specialty groups, and I guess the rest of it goes on by itself. I did receive a master's out in Colorado, and I went to school in the summertime from 55, the summers of 55, 56, and 57. And then after that, I took courses that brought me master's plus 45 here at the university.
Yeah, at MSU.
Yeah, at MSU.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that covers a sketchy rendition of the high points, I'm sure. Vince, when you were back in the Navy now, when let me ask you this. When did you first start playing violin?
Well, I do remember that I accompanied the high school choir in International Falls on a obligato part of Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring, and I was in first grade, and I had a half-size violin. I can remember that much, but I can't remember. I know it was before I went to school that I started, and that was a fluke also. It happened that that my aunt was taking violin lessons, and every time she'd have to go in to take her violin lesson, the teacher came to the house, I'd quit playing, and I guess I went and sat on the stairwell and listened to perform, and the teacher finally told my mother that young man should start playing the violin, and I guess that's how I got started.
And there was a teacher in town?
Yes.
The violinist?
Well, he lived in Fort Francis, but he came to International Falls to give lessons to about a dozen students.
Was there a string program at the school?
Yes. Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. I belonged to the high school orchestra. Mm-hmm. It seemed like it was for many years. I was probably one of the youngest, either in late junior high or early late grade school or early junior high, that I was a member to the high school orchestra. Uh-huh. It seemed like it was just an eternity that I was there.
Well,
and we did USO shows.
USO shows?
Yes.
In International Falls?
In International Falls. Well, it was in Fort Francis.
Oh.
Because Fort Francis had one of the Canadian Army deportation areas. And so we used to go and do, I did three. I have programs of those.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And you played with what other fellow high school musicians, or
yes,
did you join?
Yeah, there were. It was a community orchestra. That was a community orchestra. high school and people that were adults that were out of school that could.
The Fort Francis right next door?
Right next door, just like Fargo and Moorhead, and it's separated by the river, the Rainy River.
And that's the border between the two countries.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's interesting. Then you played, then you went, as you said, you felt that compelling patriotism and joined the service before you graduated.
Well,
and as a lot of kids did at that time.
Yeah.
And then during the war, you were in the Navy, and you said something about a band. Were you in a band, or was there a string ensemble?
No, it was strictly a band at the time, and then we would also do some string work. There was half a dozen string players that were on there, and we got together and we played all types of music. Of course, it isn't the type of music that I would have liked to play, because of the fact that if you're eating, you know, having a dinner or something like that, you should have something light and so on. But today's music is terrific. It's light stage show music. That it's all background music, and it really makes the atmosphere conducive to a fine evening.
Did you ever stop to think, was that possibly the groundwork laid for in your experience in the Navy playing for dinners and that sort of thing? Was that the first laying of the groundwork for the starting of the Apollo strings?
Very definitely.
That's
heard my dad, I can remember my dad during the war, early part of the war, taking me to down to the range on I think it was at Eveleth, at the Hippodrome, and listened to Louis Ptolemy's All-Girl Orchestra. They came in and they were doing a special show.
I see.
And I can still remember Evelyn and her magic violin, and Anita Westberg from Fargo.
She was from Moorhead, I think, wasn't she?
Moorhead or Fargo was a member of that group.
Yes.
And I remember talking to her, and I was so thrilled to see it, to talk to a real live person that's doing something in music, you know.
That must have been just a thrill.
Yes, it was very exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
Well, before we go any further, I want to point out that Vince Policicchio has been, for many years, the director and organizer of a group called the Apollo Strings from the Moorhead Senior High School, and they've been a very, very active group within the community and performed, I don't know how many hundreds of times over the years that Vince has been director. And so this setting in the Navy was perhaps the planting of a seed for that group later. After you got out of the Navy, then you went to California and spent some time there. And did you get a degree down there in that school? Or was there a degree
officer? Well, it was a degree in music. It was called Associate Music Degree.
Okay, not a teaching degree.
No, it wasn't a teaching, because it was complete, all music, all day long. Mm-hmm. There was no other courses connected with it. There was theory, harmony, writing, you know, music, composition, analyzation, and performance.
Basic music.
Just basic music.
Okay.
And then we'd spend our 8 hours a day there, and then we'd have to go, we went back and we played in the orchestras or the band or sing in the choir in the evening, and then we did our homework after that.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then you came back, you followed your teacher back here to Minnesota, and he was employed at MSU here?
Well, he was assisting Dr. McGarity, who was
Bert McGarity,
Bert.
What was your teacher's name, by the way?
Neon Wolf Fitterman.
Fitterman, that's right. I remember that name now.
And I guess I'll just have to tell you this, because this was probably one of the most unforgettable characters, if I could only put it down on paper, because of his just everything about him. He was a small, slender, very petite person. And I can remember trying to teach him how to drive a car. And he wanted me to buy a car for him. And I went out, and we did find a second-hand New York New Yorker Chrysler. The hood was almost as long as the body of the car. And here was this little man sitting behind the wheel. And, of course, you know, it was a harrowing experience because of the fact that he could not see over the hood very well.
And you were the coach.
And I was the coach, and I tried to do the best I could. And I guess he did learn how to find me how to drive, because I understand when they moved back to California, to Long Beach, and he started teaching in the Long Beach school, one of the schools down there, that he did drive a big white Cadillac to school every day.
Well, you did a good job, Vince.
Yeah, well, I don't know about that. I don't know if everybody just knew that he wasn't a good driver and everybody got out of his way or what.
Maybe that's why he bought a big car.
Yeah, right.
Okay, then after following back here, then you enrolled in Morehead State Teachers
mm-hmm.
College at that
yes.
time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then did it take you, what, two more years to get your degree then about?
Three.
3 years?
Yeah.
And then you went out, then you taught for a while.
Yep. And I taught all the time after that.
That's right. You didn't take time off when you went to Greeley for your master's
no.
degree.
No.
You did that in the summers.
Summers. Mm-hmm.
So then, and you, your first job, as you said, was assisting Lauren Busley at the high school mm-hmm. here in Morehead.
The band
and
first.
Lauren had the orchestra program too,
and the
didn't
orchestra. Mm-hmm.
And then, did you work with the orchestra immediately when you
no.
came on board?
No.
Oh, you did?
Didn't. No. He had such a big band at the time, and he needed some assistance in getting the, he used to call it, quote, the troops out there in formation for marching and so on. So I'd get that all prepared for him. And, I'd lay out music for him. And anyway, it was an experience that he was giving me. I, unbeknownst to myself, I didn't know that he was really kind of giving me information on how to join the department over there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very excited when the job was offered, and I thought about it very, very much, and at the time I was considerably in debt, and I tried to get a place that was playing more. Well, Dewey, you remember, Montana was playing heck of a lot more monies in the...
Paying, yeah.
Right. Yes, they
mm-hmm.
were probably $1,000, $1,500 more a year than...
That's right.
...than what we were getting, but
mm-hmm.
There were a lot of disadvantages there, and... I was, after I finally made up my mind, I just put everything aside. I didn't want to think about it anymore, and I just put my effort into this system, and that's the way it went.
Mm-hmm. How long now? You did your student teaching under Lauren, I suppose.
Well, I did the regular student teaching at the campus school.
Oh, did you?
And then it was from that point that that they found out that Morehead found out that I was a violinist, and I think Lauren kind of pulled the strings behind the curtain and talked to the board and finally they offered me the job of orchestra director and band assistant. And for many years I assisted the band on many of his marching tours in Winnipeg and South Dakota and all over. I was just one of the band men, you know.
That was a great glory years of the band program. I know they had some excellent bands.
Oh, well, it didn't get going until we added the junior highs when you, Dewey, and Erling Lindy came on the scene and joined the forces in the brand-new junior highs. That was the high point of our music in
yeah.
Morehead.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Now... how many years did you say how many years were you working solely with a band before you got to the orchestra?
Oh, I always worked just during that helping them out during that practice teaching bit.
Mm-hmm.
See, I practice taught in two areas there.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
There for the quarter and over at high school for, well, until as long as I wanted to work.
Let's go back to Morehead State for just a little bit, Vince. Who were some of the teachers or instructors that you had? You mentioned Bert McGarity, the band director. Who else do you remember back then? Can you remember anyone that...
Ray Votapka was another one that followed him.
That's right. Ray was
yeah.
band director after
and,
Bert.
And Alice Bartles was another one.
Yeah.
And
you must remember Dr. Maude Wink.
Oh, and Maude Wink and Doc Harmon.
Doc Harmon.
Oh, these are all people that really had a lot of influence in shaping my ideas to a finer edge, because they could see where my interests were. And I know what Miss Bartles made a remark one time, which kind of stuck with me, that says, you know, you should not be in choir. She says, your niche is in instrumental music. And I says, I know that, but it's required. You know, so I took that.
She just wanted to make it clear that which direction you should go.
Yeah, yes, right. And even to this day, I belong to the Viking Lands Kiwanis, and when Reinie Utke, who is our song leader, who is an expert at this singing and leading, when he is not there and I have to take over, I feel just like an elephant or a bull in a china store, china closet. You know, it just gets me, because put a violin in my hand or a bow, then I can do
feel a little more at home.
I feel a little bit, considerably.
Yes, I know that. Thinking back, Vince, when you first came back to Morehead, well, actually, that was your first appearance in Morehead after you'd been to California, really, wasn't it?
Yes.
What was the community like? Do you remember much about it? Now, you mentioned something to the effect that when you did graduate, that there were opportunities that paid better in Montana and so on, and yet you decided you wanted to be here.
Well,
besides the job opportunity here, I mean, do you recall anything about the community?
Oh, yes, very definitely. I can remember here at the State College, there were, I don't think, more than, even with the influx of the service people that had been honorably discharged, you know, from the armed forces, that I think we had 200 in each class, in the neighborhood of 200 in each class, and they were very packed. I can remember the humanities classes with over 100 sitting in the campus school auditorium, and two or three instructors on the stage there directing a class, you know, and that was an odd experience. I mean, I always felt that if any, I enjoyed humanities, but if anything was kind of offbeat, I thought it was that, because of the fact that here we were restless veterans, I guess we were all looking for a more closer one-to-one contact with the teachers and the professors. And
Romanesque architecture didn't turn you on too much, I mean?
No. No. It was just very, very difficult to get used to that type of an educational atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
And the campus was beautiful, as it is today, and but it was small, and I can remember the freshmen coming in every year, and having these little games that they used to play, and I can't pass this by. I came here as a special student, because I came from California school, so I wasn't really a freshman. I don't know where they categorized me at, but I was not there. But anyway, they had heard that there was a violinist that had been practicing over there in the music hall over at Weld, and they wanted me to participate in this talent show. Well, when I moved from California, my clothes didn't come with me. I don't know where they ended up. But I didn't get them for a month or 6 weeks later. So I had just, quote, rags on. And I finally met a real, who became a very, very close friend. I don't know, maybe you remember Don Gertz.
Sure do.
And Betty.
Yeah.
And Don, you can remember, was 6 foot two or three, 6 foot two anyway. And I'm only 5 foot eight. And anyway, Don said, oh, gee, he said, you know, you should play for that talent show, amateur show. He said it's just a fun thing. He says you should do it. So I got talked into it, and he says I'll even lend you my suit. Well, I think what happened was the fact that the suit, instead of the waistline being down there where your waist should be, it was up kind of way up above, down below my chin someplace. and I got up there, and the suit, well, he was along, and the suit was very, very large for me. And anyway, they must have thought I was a zoot suiter. At that time, they were just coming in from the Canadian influence, the zoot suiters. Oh, yeah. Remember those?
Yes, I sure do.
And anyway, I got on the stage and played, and I don't know what I looked like up there, but I think back of that many times. I must have really looked like a poor rag bag.
Do you remember what piece you played?
Oh, yes. I can remember. I played the Allegro Brilliant, and then I did an encore. It was the Hot Canary.
Hey.
And
wow.
That really...
That turned him on, huh?
Well, both of them were very exciting numbers, but that's the only music that I could, that I even had with me. Then I even had to send home for that, because all my music and my clothes and everything, I don't know where it ended up, but I got it.
Where did you stay or live when you were in
school? I lived I think it was Dewey, I'm not sure, but did I live in your house? You weren't
well,
there.
If you did, I wasn't there. No. I don't remember, Vince.
But you remember LaRock, Jim LaRock?
Yes. Yeah,
did Jim he live in your house?
Yes, Jim did.
Then that's where I... And Willard Snusted?
Yeah, well, no, Willard lived in an apartment behind our house.
Well, anyway, he happened to be around there, and I can remember when my who is my wife now, came down to see the school and everything, because she was thinking maybe she might want to go to school here. And I'm going to say that up in International Falls, the common names up there are Policicchio, Sartorovich, Suchuk, Maltolovich, Mahalovich, and Koran, Di Benedetto, and those were the common names up
not
there.
Not too many Johnsons and Swensons.
No, no, absolutely. If there were, I've never heard of them. So anyway, I came down here, and my wife then came down to visit the school and so on, and Willard Snusted came in the door, and I said, Willard, I'd like you to meet my girlfriend, and I introduced Willard to June, and I said, June, this is Willard Snusted. And she turned around and she said, oh, you're always joking. She says, come on now, what is his real name? And I can, you know.
Yeah, it is an unusual name. What's June's maiden name, your wife?
Texa Harris, Greek.
Texa Harris.
Texa Harris.
Is she from International Falls?
Oh, yes, yeah.
Okay.
But she was adopted by her stepfather. Hmm. So her maiden name of her father was Matheson, E-N. So he had to have been some sort of a Swede.
Well, I hope so.
Yes.
What about the community events? Did you enter into, while you were here earlier, in your school days and in your early teaching days, did you enter into any activities in the community? I know you played in the FM Symphony for a little bit, didn't you?
Yes, yep. Mm-hmm. I played 1 year, and it was the year... Yes, it was the year the school year 57-58, and then is when I started the Apollo program, the strolling string program, and also at the same time, I had this thyroid problem that I had operated on in 58, and it took me about just a little over a year before I could put a violin under my chin again, because it bothered me so much. So, in the symphony, I played bass, the string bass.
Oh, you did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But now, what about other activities? Were you involved in service clubs or anything at that point?
Not at that point. No, not at that time. I just, mm-hmm. I was so wrapped up with the school, the high school, that that I had no time to really do anything. We did an awful lot of engagements.
Tell us a little bit about the Apollo Strings. What kind of places did you play, and how many kids were involved, and how many years have you been doing it?
Okay, well, going back to the very beginning, it was just back in 1951, we came to an agreement, Mr. Busley and I, that if the program was going to go, we're going to have to start a specialty group to get some real and excitement going with the strings. And so I started some, just called them string ensembles, I guess. And I had I had one that first year, but in school year 53-54, I had five of them. Five separate groups. And I tried, like everything, to get them exposure to service clubs and so on. And I finally did convince the people that there was good music in strings. And after that, it just kind of snowballed.
Was that literature that you played in class or just kind of pop stuff?
That was, even at that time, it was the top 10. I tried to get pop stuff that was very conducive to a good string sound. Yeah. There was a lot of it that wasn't. Mm-hmm. Swing, for example, because I, for one thing, didn't know anything about swing music or mm-hmm. jazz. I'm doing it now, if I knew how much it was involved in it, I probably could have started that then, but there weren't too many people writing jazz.
Yeah, there wasn't that pressure to do it.
Yeah. One of the most important figures in string music as far as pop music, jazz, and swing is Usser Abel.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get to know him until some other violinist, in fact, it was Cliff Brunzell of the Golden Strings down in Minneapolis that told me, he says, if you want to learn a little bit about jazz, get his complete book and go through it. And if you don't understand it, ask a band man, because they play jazz and they know what all those little figures mean and everything. And that's how I got started in it.
Mm-hmm.
The Apollo Strings didn't come, the name didn't come until 1971. The name, Mr. Utke, my principal, and I got together because we had to get a name to this group, because that was the first big national important date that we had, and that was to open up. We were part of opening up Disney World in Florida.
I'd forgotten that.
And we did.
Invited down there. Did you have to send an audition tape? Or
oh yes, and of course, knowing nothing about professional music. How these professionals listen to this music, mm-hmm. I didn't know to what extent. So, anyway, I made a tape in the school there, and it was the gosh awfulest sound I've ever heard. You know, we didn't have the equipment. The equipment we had cut off all the highs and all the lows, the harmonics that really make a good sound, and it was very shallow. So then, somebody came over there, some name that one of our parents knew, came over, and he knew something about that stuff, and he set up a great big studio right there in the in our music hall. And I remember that.
You don't remember who that was, Vince? Was it from WDY or someplace?
He used to be in the old Manchester building, but he isn't. They aren't there anymore.
Okay, and a professional recording company.
Yes, and anyway. The only time we could get in there in the school when there was absolutely no noise was any time after midnight. So I made arrangements to, rather than have the kids stay up until, you know, midnight, which is kind of hard if they're early, you know, early to bed, I thought, well, maybe it would be better to start early in the morning. So we did. We set a rehearsal time for 5 o'clock. So some of these girls that lived out in the country, they got up at 3 o'clock because they had to you know, get themselves ready for school besides and music, and get their violins, the rosin, extra rosin taken off the strings and so on, so they wouldn't have any scratching sounds that would be picked up. And it was an exciting thing. Anyway, we went. It was on a Saturday morning, and we were there from, I think, 5 until 9 o'clock, and we did each piece of music twice. And it was the most shocking experience that I've ever had in my life, because when we heard it in their truck outside that was picked up, it was fantastic. I couldn't believe that we sounded like that.
Flattering.
It was, yes. Mm-hmm. It was stereo. It was delayed reverb. It was all these mm-hmm. things that they had put on. And then he said, of course, he says, we got to edit the tape. So he says, when can we get together? So he set a time, and I went over, and we edited the first tape. And
he said, that Don Gieken, by any chance?
Well, Gieken was the one that took over later.
Okay.
But mm-hmm. but anyway, we'd take this tape, and he'd move it around with his hands, with the voice real loud on it, and you could hear all these crazy noises in there. And he said, well, here's the one bad note. And he'd cut it out. He'd cut that piece out, and then he'd go over to the other tape that we took, and that happened to be a good one, and then he'd splice that piece into that bad note. So when we got through, he gave me an envelope with all the bad notes. And, you know, there were short pieces, an inch long. There was some pieces that were maybe time tempos were probably a foot long. But
yeah.
They were
mm-hmm.
all in that envelope.
You kept that envelope, I suppose.
I kept it. I still have it. I said, these are the mistakes that I learned from, you know.
That's
and then we went, then we got offers from all over the, through the friendship ambassadors, we were selected to be ambassadors from the United States to all these foreign countries, and we did.
Excuse me, who are the friendship ambassadors?
They're a government under the hand of international relationships through the government.
Okay.
I don't know if it's one of the many hundreds and thousands of branches out of the State Department.
Mm.
So anyway, we got involved with that, and the first trip that we took was to Romania. No, I'm sorry, that was in 74. We went to England, and we only stayed in England. We didn't go to Scotland and Wales. We did three other trips to England, which included Scotland, and then the third one was England, Scotland, and Wales. And then another year we went to Norway. In fact, when Leif Christensen went over there with us.
And he was on a sabbatical or something, wasn't he?
No, he was retired.
Was that it?
He was retired at that time. I know when you're thinking of that one.
Okay.
But and he wanted to go back to his hometown of Kongsvinger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Mr. Christensen, who incidentally was band director at Moorhead High School, were you there?
Oh, yeah. Yes, he was my high school band director.
Mm-hmm. Right. And he was there many years. But anyway, he wanted to go back and to his hometown, and we arranged to have a concert there in Kongsvinger. We added it in our program, and he wrote some real special music for us, which I still have today, some of the old folk tunes of Norway. And anyway, we got there, and I can remember that night on that stage, he started talking Norwegian to the crowd out there, and in essence he asked if there was anybody there would remember the Christensen family when they played their last concert before they went to America. And there was a big, long pause, and I can remember this little old gentleman coming walking down the hall, down the aisle, mumbling something in Norwegian, and I get it was a very stirring thing to see those two embrace on the stage, because here was an old man that had seen this this man off when they came to the United States. That was really great.
Well, you went on lots of trips. How many trips did you?
We did 17 tours of foreign countries.
17.
And two of them were behind the Iron Curtain. We went to Romania once, and in 76, and in 82, we went back for the second appearance there, and it was so different. The first time we were there, we were kind of in a cloud because of the fact that we didn't know what it was. I guess nobody in this country, unless they've been over there, knows what kind of a feeling you have when you live in those countries or when you travel in those countries. It's just like being in a vacuum and in a bottle, and everybody is looking at you from outside this bottle. You're just like you're being observed all the time, 100% of the time. And then just to see the reaction of the people as we performed. They love the Americans and they love the American music. It was really something. And I would speak Italian to them because the Romanians understood Italian. But I could not always pick up everything that they said in return. So we had an interpreter, and the interpreter, I wanted to make sure that we didn't say anything that would offend them just because of a word that means something to us and means something different to them. And she corrected me once, and so I avoided that. And I can't remember what it was right now at this moment, but it was something that would be better not said. Mm-hmm. But it was very flattering as I was telling it to them.
I see.
So anyway, it was an experience. It was something. We went to Austria. We played in Innsbruck, and we played in the Maria Theresa ballroom there, and all this gold leaf paintings and tapestries, and even the chairs were 24 karat gold that we sat on, you know, with the cushions on them and everything. Oh, it was just fantastic.
What was the general reaction of a group of young kids from Moorhead, Minnesota, going over there and playing in these places?
I wish I had the words to express it. The only thing I can say is that they were absolutely in a different world. They cried when we left any one of these, especially Romania. When we left Romania, the kids just sobbed.
Because they were sorry to leave, or what?
Yeah,
what are you saying?
Yes. They were sorry to leave. The Romanian people were so warm, so warm. The only ones that were hard on us were the guards. You know, they wanted to check this and they wanted to check that, and you couldn't talk to them. They wouldn't allow you to talk to them. You couldn't take a picture with them, and some of them, I would imagine, were also Russian troops. Mm. Maybe all of them. I don't know. The second time we went over there, it was a different situation. They were a little bit more lenient, but also the people were a little bit more outgoing. They were asking us to buy their stuff so that they could get American money so that they could get themselves out of Romania. For a certain amount of money, you'd pay somebody and they would get you to the American embassy and let you in through the gates. The gates were always guarded by soldiers, but if you paid one of them off, you know, that you could go in there. That's why I just can't express what the feeling of those kids were. I know that every one of them that got back said that our people living in this country don't realize what it is to be oppressed, depressed, pressurized, humiliated, as they are over there. I mean, you know, for a man to work many hours and then have some other person above you sign a slip of paper says that Dewey has worked his hard for 8 hours or 10 hours, then you'd take that over to the food shops, and then you would get your you could buy your ration of foods. But if you didn't, you know, what if you felt bad? What if you didn't feel good? You know, that guy could mess you up really good.
Yeah.
See?
It built a real appreciation then in their minds.
Yes.
Of their own country. Huh?
Very definitely. Yeah.
Well, that's good. That must be. Do you hear now much from your former students? I mean, I'm sure you run across a batch of them locally, but what about when you go distant places and run into somebody? I'm sure you must have quite a rapport with many of them yet.
I get many Christmas cards yet.
Do you?
And a few on my birthday of former students. And all, I guess the only thing they can say is that those that were in the Apollo that took these trips, that took these tours as performers, I guess they are the only ones that can really express, and I know what they're saying when they're writing a certain thing on that card or something, because there's no way to feel those students out. There's no way that you can talk from now until next spring, and you'll never get the feeling unless you were there.
I know that the community at large, I remember a few years back, as a matter of fact, there was a total community expression of thanks to Vincent Bolochicchio, held at the local Holiday Inn, as I recall. And there was a great gathering of people who all expressed their gratitude to you for having worked with their youngsters and for having brought so much music and pleasure into a lot of people's lives. That must have been a high point in your life.
Well, yes, I remember it. I just did my job, I guess, and why they did it was their concern, but...
Yeah, you didn't even retire after that year either, did you?
No, I didn't. No, I wanted to do a few more things yet, and I don't know when it was, really, but...
Must have been about
three, four, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It was a wonderful career. That's all I can say. I guess it just.
In regards to that, as a career, Vince, I'm sure that as you look back now, you experience no regrets having chosen what you did choose, right?
No.
What about the community itself? Do you feel that there were forces at work here in Moorhead and Fargo-Moorhead area in general that were very instrumental in making your career as it did, as it came about?
I'm sure there were. I suppose because of the number of people were involved in the orchestra and, you remember the great output of these students and people that used to help us during commencement. Those were great performances.
Mm-hmm.
I think they were, of all the performances, that there was nothing, no more better message to the people that these kids were sincere. And what they put their heart and soul into their music during commencement. Do you remember at Concordia and... In fact, you sat in a couple times as we had guest teachers come in and just to give it the feeling of a community effect. We tried to do it during the centennial, the anniversary. The anniversary of the district, school district.
Oh, that one. Okay.
Yeah, and we tried to get about 400 or 500. Voices in the choir, I don't think we made that many. I think we probably had 225, but and instrumentalists. We tried to get as many instrumentalists. In fact, remember we had Jim Ployer, do a special arrangements for us,
right?
So that we could tie a band, orchestra, and choir together to make a big show, and that's just exactly. What we tried to do, and it worked. It went really beautiful. When you get that massiveness in there, it's bound to have an effect.
Well, this has been very interesting, Vince. I think we should bring this thing to a close. Can you think of any particular experiences that you'd like to relate, in view of the fact this is supposed to be kind of a historical analysis of you and your life and your contributions, in particular events that you'd like to include?
Well, I think besides the feeling, the anticipation of being in the service, I think the next big shining affair would be going to college. Here's a little fellow from a little town that at that time there weren't too many people going to colleges, if you remember. You know, when you look at 200 in a class at Moorhead Teachers College here, I guess that was probably one of the shining things. I thought, you know, it was such it was so different. Up in my little hometown up there, they were so cliquish and you know, nothing really functioned good in the community. Everybody was on their own, kind of mavericks and so on. And I don't know, maybe I got some of that, and that's why I started the way I did in music. I don't know, but it was fun. When I think back of the early years, and I suppose I remember that my wife, who is my wife now, came down to visit us and here in Moorhead, and all our ups and downs with after we were married, and living in a trailer house and freezing to our clothes freezing to the floor. I guess you don't forget those things, you know, the highlights. You know, that's about it.
Yeah. So, well, I guess the exposure of college to anyone is hopefully a broadening experience. But I think it was particularly true here. I share those feelings, Vince, when I was here too. And, I feel an indebtedness to not just to the community but to the college as well, I think, for having been there.
You bet.
Well, if there's nothing further, Vince, we'll call her quits. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Dewey, for the opportunity.
And thank you, Lee.